call for followers of Christ to develop as well. And so that's one of the roles of the church, is to help people know and follow Christ. And so even going into this year, we're going to do a 4-week series on just called Sacred Pace. I'll get into some of that, of the why, in a second. So we'll do that in January. And then starting in February, we're going to go through the book of 2 Corinthians. Happens to be my favorite book of the Bible. I've been trying to do this as a Crosspoint series for 8 years now. And I finally got it. So all the Crosspoints that we're affiliated with in Orlando will be going through this way. But the beauty of 2 Corinthians is it talks about, how do we live in light of the gospel? How do we live in light of who Jesus is and what has he accomplished for us? And you will be strangely encouraged by the Corinthians, right? Because they're kind of dysfunctional. And we're kind of dysfunctional. And so, but God transforms us. He changes us. And so they just kind of go through different issues that we all face, that we face as individuals, that we face as a church, and says, hey, how do we respond to these issues in light of the gospel? And so we will be doing that starting in February. But for January, we are going to do a 4-week series, and I just entitled it Sacred Pace. I think Frank, even just reading that passage, made me feel calm, right? Doesn't that sound good? Just grab your Bible and read back through that Matthew chapter 11, verse 28. Or even just think about Psalm 23, what Jeremiah read. He leads me beside still waters. He brings rest to my soul. Because the reality is, we don't live in a culture that drives at what I call a sacred pace or a healthy pace. We live in a culture that lives in a very driven pace, a very hurried pace. And so we're going to do four weeks on what does this look like to live at a sacred pace. And I had to like catch myself a little bit, because I was like, I know this is like, hurry is a me issue. It's a Brian thing. And I didn't want to just project that on everybody else, right? There's Larry Osborne. He's a pastor in San Diego. He has a little saying. He calls it gift projection. And so if we're gifted in an area, maybe we're gifted in generosity, or we're gifted in mercy, or like Tiffany, we're gifted in kids, we don't understand why everybody else isn't passionate about those things. And so we project our gift onto other people. So I didn't want to project Brian's hurriedness on everybody else. But I think it's more than a Brian issue. I think it's a cultural issue. I think it's a heart issue. A book that I will lean heavily on, and just, I'll share this, but you can go ahead and buy it and be convicted of it as I was. It's called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And so the first part of the sermon, I'm just kind of setting the context of what the book sets as, what is this issue of hurry? And why is it such a problem? Why are we all a part of it? So anybody coming out of the holidays, you feel like super rested, right? Like just real calm and, man, that was just peaceful, right? No. You're exhausted, tired, scattered. You're just like, praise God I'm here, right? I actually made it. Like half of me is here at least, right? That's the issue. And so I know it's not a Brian issue, because if you look at these things that God's given us to live at a sacred pace, things like Sabbath and solitude and simplicity, our culture is not good at these things. Even as Christians, 70% of people are disconnected from the church. Only 17% of people, not just like practice Sabbath, but actually are regular attenders of a worship service. That's not a knock on everybody. That's just the reality of the world we live in. If you talk to people like, hey, why don't you go to church? We had one of our kids' friends. It's like, we don't have time for that in our schedule. It was a 10-year-old. Like, he was dead serious. And he's probably right. Right? And I thought it was interesting, even that stat of 17% of people regularly attend church. Regular attendance of church, they considered 3 out of 8 weeks. So regular isn't even half the time. All right? So God gives us these things to slow us down, to help us live in peace. But they're hard to do. Something like solitude, like, just engaging in prayer, engaging in Bible study. It said that half of people engage in Bible study regularly. Again, I kind of looked up regularly. That was 3 to 4 times a year they will read the Bible. That's what the norm is. A thing like simplicity, it's hard. You can just Google this stuff. But we live in a culture we have massive amounts of debt. The average non-mortgage debt in our culture is $24,000. There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of things to do. And so we live in a culture that doesn't kind of run at what I call a sacred pace, a restful pace, a pace that's described in Matthew chapter 11. Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. When I think about my life, when I think about the lives of my friends and neighbors and y'all, it doesn't feel light. It doesn't feel easy. It doesn't feel that we run at a sacred pace. And that provides a challenge. So I want to look at what I kind of like the tagline for the series. I said, hey, what does it look like to live at a pace and with a purpose that reveals that we trust that God is God and we are not? What does it look like to live at a pace and with a purpose? So the number one felt need in Jupiter, like they're saying like, hey, is it like, where am I going to, you know, is there a roof over my head? Is there food on the table? Like that's an issue for some of us. But the number one thing in our culture, in our context is purpose, a lack of purpose. So what does it look like to live at a pace and with a purpose that reveals that we trust that God is God and we are not? And that's what I want to unpack these 4 weeks, that we would be people that live for what is important and not just urgent, the things that matter. And according to the Bible, the things that matter are God and other people, right? We kind of come back to this every week at Crosspoint. We are called to love God and love people. So what does it look like to live in a way that actually values those things, that actually puts into practice those things in the middle of our context? In this book, where it kind of all stemmed from, John Ortberg is a pastor in California, and he met with a mentor of his, Dallas Willard, who embodies this stuff well. And he went, his way of saying to live at a pace and with a purpose, he said to him, what do I need to do to become the me I want to be? He went to Dallas Willard and said, he was a mega church pastor. He was super successful, had books, had the whole deal, but he was hurried. He was unsatisfied. He didn't have the purpose. What do I need to do to become the me I want to be? What do I need to do to live with purpose and at a pace that's valued? And Dallas Willard said to him, you must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. You must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. This is it. Hurry is the great enemy of spiritual life in our day. So he didn't say, hey, sin's the great enemy of our spiritual life today. He's like, no. Hurry is the great enemy of the spiritual life of our day. And it's a great way to describe our culture, isn't it? How would you describe our culture? Hurried. Yeah, like we just went through Christmas. We see this all the time. We lived hurried lives. And what he is driving at is saying, like, no, like actually hurry is the enemy of your relationship with God and with others. John Mark Comer in the book said it this way: both sin and busyness have the exact same effect. They cut off your connection to God, to other people, and to even your own soul. So this hurriedness, this busyness cuts off our connection to God, to others, and to our own soul. And if you think about it, think about like, what does God call us to be? Like number one thing, love, right? Go to 1 Corinthians, love is what? Patient. Have you ever tried to be patient in a hurry? No, so you can't love when you're in a hurry. What's the next thing? Love, joy. Right, a definition of joy is a secret of happiness is to have a presence in the moment, to be fully alive in a moment, in a time. You can't be fully present when you're in a hurry, so you ultimately can't have joy when you're in a hurry. What about peace? Like we don't have to explain that one. Have you ever had peace while you're in a hurry? Have you ever brought peace to your house, like when you're trying to get out the door? No, it's not there. And so these have the same effect to us. They cut off our connection to God, to other people, and our soul. Again, I'm doing some of these quotes to just kind of set the context, set the feel. One psychiatrist, psychological doctor calls it hurry sickness. And he said, hurry sickness is a continuous struggle. This is like super convicting and kind of sums up everything. A continuous struggle and unremitting attempt to accomplish or achieve more and more things or participate in more and more events in less time. Can I get some amens to more and more things and more events coming out of the holiday season? Now, this is one thing. I do this to you guys sometimes. This was by Murray Friedman. He wrote that in 1950. Wow. Right? And so even in 1950, there was this hurriedness of trying to accomplish more and more things and to do more and more events in less time. All that thing, all those things have just blown up. They have just gotten worse. But what Jesus does, he always drives us at the heart, because really, this hurriedness is a heart issue more than a habit issue. Like, there's definitely habits that cause this, but it's stemming from our heart. In the book, they talk about hurry is a sign of something else. So we're hurried for a reason. And hurry is a sign of either running from something. So we're running something from our past. We just want to keep busy so we don't have to deal with whatever it was. They talk about just even a freedom of failure. I have this. Like, I'm driven often of, like, say, this church. But I felt better at 10:45 than I did at 10:35. Right? So at 10:35, I was like, oh, Karina's here. That's awesome. So were so a couple other people. Like, oh. And I know going in it's going to be live. But now, oh, more people came. Oh, I feel better. Right? Why? I don't want to fail. Right? And it causes me to be hurried. What do I need to do? What do I need to go? We're in a hurry because we don't know how to be bored. Right? You know this if you have kids. One stat is a person with an iPhone touches it 2,600 times a day. We touch our phone 2,600 times a day. The average guy before the age of 21 plays an average of 10,000 hours of video games. We spend 705 hours a year on social media. We spend 2,700 hours a year watching TV. Right? So time is not the issue. We got time. Right? It's what are we doing with this time? And a lot of times we're using our time just running from stuff. Some of us also are running to something. Right? We're trying to prove something. We're trying to attain something. It's the next experience. Even for us, coming back from Christmas, awesome Christmas break. And again, some of this was just unforeseeable, like scheduling things and stuff. But like, I mean, we had a service on Sunday. Then we had a Christmas Eve service on Tuesday. Then we had Christmas on Wednesday. And then we flew out at 5 in the morning to St. Louis on Thursday, and then we flew into Orlando for a cheerleading thing on the following Thursday, and then we drove in last night at 7 o'clock, right? And then it's like, oh yeah, guess what's tomorrow? A sermon on being hurried. Right? So we're running to, it's the next thing. These things are available to us. We can do these things. They're available to us. Some of us are running to try and attain a sense of self-worth. This cheerleading thing was amazing. It's been awesome for our daughter, Alana. She's like getting a really good exercise and she's determined and she just loves it. It brings her a lot of joy. But we were at this thing. It's like the national whatever thing. And they kind of like took over this huge resort. There's people everywhere. There was this sort of underlying like stress going on with these little girls. Like it was crazy. Like they were like sort of nervous the whole time about their next routine and their next thing. Right? And part of that wasn't bad. Like, we should have, like, I get a little nervous when I'm going to preach, and that's not a bad thing. But there was, like, this hurriedness to it. There's kind of, like, underlying tenseness to everything. And I could say, oh, these little girls, they shouldn't care about a cheerleading competition. But I do the same thing for a church service. You do the same thing with, how's your house look when somebody's coming over? We do the same thing when we're trying to get our holiday meals together. We want it to be just perfect. Right, we're running to things, and maybe it's trying to get our self-worth or some sort of promotion at work or this next purchase. If I just get this next thing. I'll get this little high. And so it leads to lives of hurry. The last one, I thought, this is all of us. He says, sometimes we're in a hurry because we're just victims of the rights and responsibilities of the modern world. We're victims of the rights and the responsibilities of the modern world. To live in our world leads us to be hurried. We live in a hurried world. You can look at the stats of Palm Beach County. The average person can't afford to live here. It's like over half of people that live in Palm Beach County actually can't afford to live here. That's just like scraping by, like trying to pay the bills, right? And so we're victims of those things. And so we have to work more and do more and run to live in a certain place. It's just the nature and the culture of the world that we live in. And so that's not healthy. It's not good. And so what we're going to do is, how do we live deliberately? How do we live at a pace and with a purpose in the middle of the chaos of this noisy, fast-paced, busy, digital world we call home? Because we can't change all that, right? Like, your boss still wants you there at a certain time tomorrow morning. You still got to show up. But we can change our hearts. We can change what we say yes to. We can change what we give our time to. We can change what we value as most important. And the answer, and hopefully any church you ever walk into, the answer is, how do we do that? To trust and follow Jesus. Answer in kids' ministry is the same. Answer in here is the same. It's to put your trust in and follow Jesus. Jesus says, he says what? I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. And so Jesus is, if we believe that he is the truth, like, hey, he knows the truth. He says, but I am the way. Live like I'm calling you to live. Live like I live. And then you won't have a hurried and frantic life. You'll have true life, eternal life, the good life, the blessed life. But we got to trust him, and we got to follow him. And that's what makes sense of this passage. Look at verse 28. What is his command? He says, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. That word for rest, there's like 14 different Hebrew words that it kind of summarizes. It means to rest. I will bring you relief. I will make you refreshed. And so the first step to cure hurry sickness, to live deliberately with pace and purpose in this world, is to come to him, to accept this great invitation. Jesus' command isn't like, hey, go do more stuff. What's his command? Come to me. Did he tell you to do anything? Nope. He says, come to me. And so some of us, it's like we need to come to him for a first time. Like, hey, I've been putting my trust in all these other things. I need to put my trust in you. But the come to me, it's written in the present tense. It's not some past tense thing only, right? Covey's my Greek girl, right? It's in the present. It's an ongoing coming to Jesus. So it doesn't like, oh yeah, I came to Jesus. I became a Christian back in 1973 and blah, blah, blah. Like, no. Yes, come to him then, and come to him today if you haven't, but come to him continually. Continually come to Jesus and you will have rest. And so how do we come to him? We put our faith and trust in him. We put our faith and trust in him. So to come to Jesus, to put our faith in him, to put our trust in him, it means that we fundamentally have to leave putting our trust in something else. To come to him, it means we fundamentally have to leave something else. We have to leave a different sort of life. Now, the good news is, all you're leaving is a life that leaves you labored and heavy laden, or overburdened, as it says. So the first call is to accept this invitation. Put your faith in him. Put your trust in him. Now, this is for, like, one, the context of this verse is towards, like, these religious people. the Pharisees were putting religious burdens on the people around them. Do this, you have to keep these laws. They made up their own. So there's this call for the religious to come to him. The overburdenness of trying to earn their salvation, this legalism. Verse 20, right above it, it says to repent. He says, then he began to denounce the cities where most of his mighty works had been done because they did not repent. They did not turn from putting their trust in themselves and what they did to putting their trust in him. And so it's the religious, but it's also for the irreligious, right? There's many in our culture that are just as hurried, just as busy. They're putting trust in themselves. But Jesus says, come to me, all who are labor and are heavy laden, right? It's an invitation that is open to everybody. It's for everybody. It's for the religious, for the irreligious. But primarily it's for those who are weary and heavy laden, that are overburdened by the sin that's in their life, by the sin that's around them. Jesus says, come to me, all. Why? Because he says, I will give you rest. I will give you refreshment. I will give you relief. I will refuel you. The picture is a person with a great load, right? They're going down the street and they got a great load on their back, and they're trying to go, and they can't go anymore. And then what happens? Somebody else comes along and says, I'll give you relief. I'll take the load. They see the distress and offer to take it. And ultimately, right, this points us to the cross. Like, that's why we have this every week. Everything always comes back to that, because ultimately, that's what Jesus accomplished on the cross, right? He saw the overburdened nature of sin. He saw how it causes us to be weary. It causes us to labor. It causes us to be heavy laden. He saw it. And what did he do? He left the rest. He left the peace. He left the connection with the Father. What? To enter into the unrest of this world, to the brokenness of the world, the darkness of the world. And what did he do? He took it up on the cross. He took the load of our sin. That's what causes the hurriedness. That's what causes the unrest. It's putting our faith and trust in things other than him. And the gospel says that Jesus took the load. He gives us relief. We don't have to keep pursuing it. We don't keep trying to find our identity in it. We don't have to continue to find our accomplishment in these things. Jesus took that load for us. Right? He takes our burden, and what does he do? He gives us his rest. He gives us his righteousness. He gives us his peace. He gives us his connection with the Father. Right? And that brings us that deep soul rest that we all need, that we're trying to fix with all the things that are causing us to be hurried. And he simply says, come to me. And so we got to ask, like, will you come to him? Right? Will you come to him once? Right? Maybe you're overburdened by sin, by brokenness. Maybe you're hurried around by trying to prove something, or maybe you're overburdened by something that has happened to you and you're running from it, just trying to keep yourself busy to not deal with it. Guess what? Jesus said, I took that for you. I'll give you relief. I will give you rest. Will you come to him? But it's also for what? For all. It's for all of us. Like, did anybody graduate from that after you became a Christian? No, we're still all running from stuff and running to stuff and victims of the roles and responsibilities of this world, right? And so he calls us to continually come to him. That's what this series is all about. And we can come to him through solitude and through gathering and through a life that's following him. And so will we come to him once, and then will we come to him in the everyday issues that just press on us? He invites us to come to us. And it's not a bad thing. He'll give us rest. And then he goes on and he says in verse 29, to take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. He keeps coming back to this rest thing, right? Do you think he knew that it would be an issue? It was an issue then. It's an issue now. And he says, take my yoke upon you. Any farmers in the house? Any farmers? No? No. So, yoke, weird word. It's like a thing that connected to animals. There's a piece of farming equipment, right? But in the first century, it was an expression for a rabbi's way of reading the Torah, of following the Torah. This past fall, we went through the Sermon on the Mount. And so that was Jesus's yoke. This is how I interpret. This is how you live out. This is how you follow God. He says, take my yoke upon me and learn from me. Comer described it as this was Jesus' way to shoulder at times crippling weight of life. This is the way to get through life. This is the way to handle marriage. This is the way to handle divorce. This is how you pray. This is what you do with money. This is how you view sex. This is how you handle conflict. This is how you view government. All of it. This is how you do it. And it's an odd image, a yoke, but it's a helpful way in showing us how do we shoulder the load? How do we get relief, refreshment from the crushing burdens and anxieties of life? Comer in the book, I really like this. He says, Jesus doesn't offer an escape, right? Isn't that that's the boredom thing. I just want to escape, right? So I can look at Facebook for a while because I get to what? Escape. I can veg out on Netflix for like a lot of episodes in a row. Man, we were in the hotel and they had cable, like that HGTV, like flip or flop. I'm like, no, turn it off before they start another one, right? Because they just suck you in. Why? Because we want to escape. But Jesus doesn't offer an escape. He offers us something far better. He offers us equipment. He offers his apprentices or followers a whole new way to bear the weight of our humanity with ease. I love this. At his side. That's what a yoke would do. It would combine two animals. Like two oxen in the field, tied shoulder to shoulder, with Jesus doing the heavy lifting. I will give you life. Follow me. I'm going to set the pace. Look at it. At his pace. To live at a sacred pace. Not the pace of the modern world, at Jesus' pace. Slow. Just suck this in, right? Slow. Unhurried. Present to the moment. Full of love and joy and peace. I love this. An easy life isn't an option. Right? Y'all have been alive long enough to know that an easy life is not an option in the brokenness of this world. But an easy yoke is. When we trust him, when we follow him, when we live according to his yoke, his ways, as opposed to ours in this world. And then he says, take my yoke upon and learn from me. It's the word for a disciple. A disciple is just simply one that learns through instruction. Disciples of Jesus, followers of Jesus, are learners of Jesus. We learn from him. Comer in this book, he loves the word apprentices. What do apprentices do? They learn from the master, right? So other cultures where they still like make shoes by hand and stuff like that, you apprentice under somebody. You learn from them. And Jesus says, hey, come and learn from me. And he talks about organizing our life around these three basic goals of how we're going to learn. So first you learn from Jesus by being with Jesus. That's why things like Sabbath, being here, it's being with Jesus. It's his word. It's his people. It's his spirit. So we learn from being with Jesus. And then as you are with Jesus, you become like Jesus. 2 Corinthians 4 says, you become what you behold. Right? So you want to become like Jesus? Look at him. Read about him. Learn about him. See his grace. See his mercy. See his love. See his joy, his patience, his kindness. Be with him. And we do that through Sabbath, and we do that through solitude, and we do that through living simple lives where we actually have time for it. And then as you're with him, as you become like him, you know what happens? This really weird thing. You start doing what he would do. Right? We see it with our kids. What do our kids do? Whatever we do. They add some things here and there because they got their own dark hearts, right? But in general, our kids kind of have big personalities. They like to talk. Where do they get that from? Right? Our kids are passionate. They get it. And so why? They're with us. Your kids want to be like you. And it's the same thing with us and Jesus. So we need to be with Jesus. If we're going to learn from him, we can become like him. And then we begin to do what he would do. It's what it means to learn from him. And so we need to ask, will we take the time to be with Jesus? Look, the hurriedness is not slowing down. But do we want to continue in it? Will we take the time daily? Will we take the time weekly? Will we take the time away to be with Jesus? Will we take the time to pray and think about what our life would look like if Jesus were living it? If we think about, because right, like Jesus is a single dude from 2,000 years ago. But he was made in the image of God. He shows us how to love people, how to be with people, how to connect with God. And so when we begin to be with him and become like him, it helps us to navigate, like, how do we navigate work, the pressures of work? How do we navigate life with small children? Right? That's a whole thing. How do we navigate failing health? How do we view what we do with our money? That all happens as we're with Jesus and we become more and more like him. Now, the good news is, like verse 30 says this isn't like torture, right? Like, it's just easy to get the head nods when you start describing the overburdenedness of our life. But the life of following Jesus, of learning from Jesus, of following Jesus, of living the lifestyle of Jesus, what does he say about it? In verse 30, it says, "For my yoke, my way is easy, and my burden is light." Again, I just have to read these things over and over and over again to myself so I'll actually believe them. And the more that I believe them, the more I will follow in the way of Jesus. He says, my way is easy, my burden is light. He's saying, my way is, it's wholesome, it's useful, it's good. My yoke isn't harsh. My yoke is gracious. So think about the life of Jesus, okay? Like, you think Jesus had a full schedule? Think some people wanted some time with Jesus? Oh, that's God. Oh, that guy just turned all that bread into a lot more bread. I got a couple questions for him, right? He had a full schedule. Just read through the Gospels and look at how often Jesus is interrupted. How many people wanted a piece of Jesus, how busy he actually was. So he had a full schedule, yet he always had time to be with the Father. Did he not? He's always leaving people and waking up early in the morning and just like, oh, where'd Jesus go? Ah, he just kind of took off for a couple of days. Jesus, we need you right now. They died. Well, I'll be there in 2 days, right? He always had time for the Father. He always had time for others. He never came off hurried. Right? It wasn't like there wasn't stuff for him to do. Like, oh, Jesus, you didn't have to deal with Wi-Fi. Well, no. He had to deal with the whole world wanting a piece of him. Right? Because this unhurried life were just outgrowths of the way that he lived, his way of being human. And that, what he's not saying is that you're just going to have this life of ease and just kind of kick back and have somebody throw grapes in your mouth and just, no, like it's not careful ease, but it's a life of service of others that bring joy. A life that is full of delight and not just drudgery. Jesus enjoyed God. Jesus enjoyed other people. He wasn't hurried and moving and always around. If you think about it, Jesus always had margin, didn't he? Go back and read what, just read any of them, right? He always had time for somebody interrupting him. How many of us have any margin? Like time margin, financial margin, relational margin, emotional margin, right? We just run like at 100%. That's why Christmas hits and the whole thing explodes, right? We're running at like 100%, no margin. But somebody said that margin is the difference between our load and our limits, right? And so we just fill up our load to the limit, and then we get interrupted and the whole thing just falls apart. But he had space for what matters. Jesus always had space for what? God and people. Look, he's got space for you. Come to him. Put your trust in him. Spend time with him. Comer in the book said this. He says, Jesus' weekly schedule, well, I love this, was a prophetic act against the hurried rhythms of our world. A prophetic act. It spoke against the hurried rhythms of our world. And so, how do we do that? The next 3 weeks, we're going to be talking about these practices or rhythms that were central to the life of Jesus. It's what he calls us, invites us into. He calls us, invites us into solitude, into time with him. It's a regular time of internal and external quiet to be away with and hear from and talk to the Father. Listen to that. Internal and external quiet. Can somebody want that? To be away from, with, and hear from, and talk with the Father. We're going to talk about Sabbath. A lot of people think we're nuts right now. That we're going to take an hour and 15 minutes of the 24 hours that we have every day, of the 7 days a week, that we're going to take 1 hour to rest, to be with the Father, to be with people, to be reminded of what matters. We're going to talk about how that will actually change us. That simple practice will change. I try and convince that people, I'm like, people, I know you don't have time, and I know that I'm the pastor, and I probably got some like skin in the game, and I just got an ego, and I want more people. I'm sure that's all there. But I do believe if you just take one day, if you take 1 hour, 2 hours, once a week to come and be with the Father, to be with Jesus, to be with his people, it will shape everything else you do. And it's not just my opinion. Jesus says, this is what I'm calling you to do. You need it. You have limits. You need to be reminded that I am God and you are not. And you can rest. So we're going to talk about Sabbath, and we're going to talk about simplicity and slowing. Caveat in the book. I think he takes the most stretches here, but I think what he's driving at is true. But we're going to look at what does it look like to choose to leverage our time? What does it look like to leverage our money and our talents and our possessions towards that what matters most? We all got time. We all got money. We all got possessions. We all give them towards something. How do we be people that give them towards what matters most? What matters most again? God, others. And so as we move into this time of communion, it's a healthy time to just stop and reflect. It's actually one of my favorite things about what we do here at Crosspoint. We practice communion every week. It's something that we value, but actually being a part of this community for the past couple of years has caused me to value it more because I love the way that we reflect. I love the way that people pray. I love the way that people think, and it's just a time to confess the ways that we've been trusting in ourselves, which has resulted in leading very hurried lives, which causes us not to have space for what matters most, to love God and love people. And we can confess to that we live a hurried life, that we can confess to God that yes, we have these habits, but really it's our hearts that we're not content. That we're, as Augustine says, that we're restless. And Augustine says, you'll remain restless until you find your rest in him. And that's why Jesus, we're called to confess, but then we come. We come to Jesus and we accept his offer. We give him our load, right? And he gives us his rest. At Crosspoint, when we participate in communion, we take the bread and dip it in the cup. And if you're a follower of Christ, it's a declaration that Jesus has taken your load. Jesus has taken your sin. Jesus has taken the sin that has been done to you. Jesus has taken the sin that you've done to others, and he's taken it. His body was broken for it. His blood was shed for it. And he says, not only am I going to take your stuff, I'm going to give you my rest. I'm going to give you my joy. I'm going to give you my righteousness. And he simply says, in order to do that, come to me. And so if you're a follower of Christ, communion is a time to come to him. My trust is in him. My faith is in him. Even when I botch this up, when I walk out of this room right now, my hope isn't in how sacred of a pace I live, how unhurried of a life I live. My hope and trust is that Jesus lived that life for me. And one day he'll come and set it all right. And then I would encourage you to over this week, over this month, over this year, for the rest of life, connect. So we want to confess, we want to come, we want to connect. Take up these habits that Jesus invites us into. Gather with his community. Seek time with him. Begin to live in a way that Jesus would live if he were you. And I promise you, it will be a good life. It won't be unbusy. It won't be without problems. But in the midst of the problems, you're with Jesus. And he will make it all right. Let's pray.